I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Philadelphia is home to some famous historic buildings, Independence Hall, Betsy Ross's house, John Coltrane's house, the Academy of Music, to name just a few. And yet the city's percentage of historic designations at 2.2% is well below the national average. Most of the buildings in the city are old, built before 1945. For decades, the city was losing residents and its economy was just treading water. That has changed in recent years as a construction boom is transforming Center City and the surrounding neighborhoods. Developers are buying up properties, and that has sometimes put them on a collision course with preservationists. We have asked three activists, preservationists, for lack of a better word, to tell us what they want to preserve and why, what is lost when a historic, important, and beloved building is destroyed, how to reconcile redevelopment with preservation. And let me introduce them to you. Faye Anderson is director of All That Philly Jazz, documenting Philadelphia's golden age of jazz. She's also chair of Avenging the Ancestors Coalition Committee on Historic Preservation. Faye Anderson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
And next to Faye Anderson is Oscar Beisert, and he's a local preservationist, founder of the Keeping Society of Philadelphia, and was a member of Philadelphia's Historic Preservation Task Force, works now for FEMA. And Oscar Beisert, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
And rounding out our trio of guests is Yue Wu, and she's a community planner, project associate for the Philadelphia Chinatown Development Corporation, served as the community liaison on behalf of the Corporation for the Historic Preservation Citizen Engagement Toolkit Project. Yue, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499 to join our conversation. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I do want to begin with a more personal question, which is your particular and unique interest in preservation, especially in Philadelphia. Faye, let me begin with you.
Well, what I always say is that the ancestors have done the heavy lifting. I have been fascinated with slavery, Reconstruction, since I was a teenager, and I still don't understand how they survived. I'm glad they survived and left us a legacy of faith and triumph and resistance. And so the least we can do as the beneficiaries of their legacy is preserve their stories in public memory.
And I will pick up on all of that. How about for you, Oscar? You're not from around these parts?
I guess maybe the fact that I'm from Texas. And, you know, in Texas, we do have some historic cities and places, obviously. But nothing quite like Philadelphia. I had not been to Philadelphia until I was in graduate school. And I took a course in graduate school and was mentored by someone who is a big fan of Philadelphia. And so I became familiar with the city and just really fell in love with its, like, old world quality. I think it's sort of like even when you put in an interstate through an area to the side,
676.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly. You walk a block over, and there's this sort of early 19th century vignette of houses on an alley that you would expect to see in Europe. And I think that the fact that, you know, I think when I first was introduced to Philadelphia, I thought a lot more of it was valued and protected than actually is. So.
And I'll pick up on that as well. How about for you, Wei? You're a relative newcomer to Philadelphia.
Yes, I came here in 2016 for graduate school. I studied historic preservation, and I expected the program would tell me how to preserve the amazing historic architecture. And I learned that, and I also learned that what's also important is people living in those buildings and the connections between the community members and the culture and identity embedded in the neighborhood itself. So after graduation, I have been working at Philadelphia Chinatown Development Corporation, and this is a very special neighborhood in the Center City, and I'm fascinated about the neighborhood, about the community.
And there's a lot going on there, which we will pick up as well. Let me put out another sort of broad-based question, and actually, Oscar, if I can put it to you first. And I said in my introduction, just look around. You can see all the construction projects that are happening all around Center City and some of the surrounding neighborhoods. Has that put developers on a collision course with preservationists?
So I think this is an important question because, unfortunately, we live in a city where most developers see preservation as a as a stopping point rather than as a way to actually guide development. I think if you went to Washington D.C. or Baltimore or New York City, you would see preservation is a lot more of is much more ingrained in the development culture there. You could just look at the demolition stats for the last since 2007. We've demolished 8,880 buildings.
Wow.
And because only 2.2 or 4% is protected, we don't even know what we've lost. I have a list of a couple hundred buildings that I believe were significant, but we don't even know what was lost. And I think that what's happened is a culture of demolition has basically taken over the development community in this city. That's not to say there aren't some saviors.
Absolutely. And I mean, some maybe outliers when it comes to things like that. Faye, let me ask you about the Henry Minton House. And I know that's a house that you have worked to try to preserve. Tell us about the house. Tell us about Henry Minton and what happened.
Well, Oscar actually nominated Henry Minton House. Your listeners may be familiar with the house. It's the it's where the 12th Street Gym is currently located. Henry Minton was an elite caterer. He was a member, a leader in the free black community, and he helped finance abolitionists that in his home he hosted Frederick Douglass, his neighbor William Still, father of the Underground Railroad. And what really resonates with me, he provided John Brown with a place to stay shortly before Harper's Ferry. And if I may add, today is John Brown's birthday.
He was
born
on
this day in 1800. So happy birthday, John Brown.
But this is a house, I mean, for all the history that you believe is worth preserving.
Oh, absolutely. And the commission, there are criteria for listing, for designation. And the Committee on Historic Designation, unanimously voted that Oscar's nomination satisfied the criteria. The commission members agreed that the nomination satisfied the criteria for nomination. But then they imposed this fake criterion that the property has to be, quote, recognizable, that the front facade has changed over the years. Now, I want your listeners to think about, okay, you may recognize the White House, Independence Hall, the Bessie Ross House, but how many historic properties are recognizable just by looking at them? You have to have signage to interpret what are you looking at. So here it is, this building that holds all of these stories will be demolished, and the owner has made it clear he wants to demolish it. All you have to do, put a $25 banner. This is the Henry Minton House, but they use that fake criterion to give the owner what he wants, which is to demolish this historic building.
Oscar, let me just briefly go back to you, and then we'll also get you back in on the conversation. But there are some very specific criteria that the Historic Association looks to in order to designate a house worthy of preservation.
That's correct. I think that as far as that goes, what Faye's referencing is that in order to nominate something, it has to be, the place where an event, occurred, or it's this specific architectural style, or it represents an era of architectural style, or, someone important lived there. In the case of the Minton House, it was nominated specifically because from 1853 to 1883, Mr. Minton lived there and had his home and restaurant.
And he was a caterer.
And he was a caterer. And I think it's W.E.B. Du Bois refers to the triumvirate and it was Minton and two other caterers. Mm-hmm. And this, I believe, is the last house standing from that early group of caterers in Philadelphia. And that, because catering is like related to like service, it was a way that African Americans could, you know, enter this a successful trade. And I think in this case, what they're introducing is an integrity standard. Mm-hmm. So let's say I'd nominated the building because of its colonial facade, and that facade was gone. Then I understand. But when you're nominating a building because someone lived there and, you know, the basic form of the building is still there, I think when you talk about marginalized communities, it's really important to have a greater discussion about integrity standards.
Let me, I'll pick up on that, but let me go back to you, Yue, and talk a bit about the rail park, which was put in, after many years of planning, put into Chinatown. What have been, I guess, the pros and perhaps even the cons of the park?
So I will talk about pros first. So in the boundary of Chinatown, by which I mean from Filbert Street to Spring Garden and from 8th Street to 13th Street, there's no public park in the neighborhood.
No greenery in many ways.
No. So the rail park is the first park in the neighborhood, and it does provide a green space, an open space for the community. And however, the development of the park does not have enough engagement with the community. So the park, the design of the park honors the industrial history of the neighborhood, but it didn't recognize a Chinatown community culture and story. And we have a lot of seniors in the neighborhood, and the park, the entrance closer to the Chinatown, the entrance is not accessible for seniors. It doesn't have an elevator. So, and another thing is that we are concerned the park will be a drive for gentrification. And
it's a concern.
Yes, yes. And what's happening is some large property developers, they have been buying large properties in the neighborhood, and this is already happening. And they are trying to brand the neighborhood to a higher income residents, and there are a lot of like small business in the neighborhood, and they are threatened right now.
Well, let's take a very short break and we'll get back to our conversation. That's Yue Wu, and she's a community planner project associate for the Philadelphia Chinatown Development Corporation. Faye Anderson with us as well. She's director of All That Philly Jazz, and she's chair of the Avenging the Ancestors Coalition Committee on Historic Preservation. Oscar Beisert is a local preservationist, founder of Keeping Society of Philadelphia, and we have convened these three preservationists, calling them, for lack of a better word, activist preservationists or citizen preservationists. And you can join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with some preservationists about Philly and its many older buildings, how redevelopment or development is in some ways on a collision course with preservation, not always, but sometimes. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Oscar, you seem to be very interested in preserving churches. Old Church, St. Laurentius, First African Baptist, Lutheran Seminary, Christian Street Baptist Church as well. What is your interest in those buildings?
Well, I think as both of my fellow guests mentioned, preservation is also about people. And I think that with churches, most often, I'm not personally very religious. I mean, I'm a Christian, I'm a Lutheran, but I'm a lax Lutheran. And I think that with churches, often there are congregants who see that this may happen, a demolition or, you know, potential misuse of the building. And so I'm contacted and asked to help nominate the building. That was certainly the case with First African Baptist. and with St. Laurentius Church. I'd seen that they had tried to nominate the building with the Historical Commission, had been told that the commission wasn't set up for fast-track nominations. And I knew, since I'd read the ordinance, that they could nominate the building successfully. And so that's what got me involved with churches. The Lutheran Seminary site is a beautiful site with Frank Furness buildings. And, you know, it's an architecturally amazing, you know, site. So
once, though, a building is nominated, then what happens? I mean, does that mean it's preserved?
So a nomination is filed, and then the staff of the Historical Commission reviews the nomination, and once they decide that it's complete and correct, then they send out a notice to the property owner, and then at that point the protection starts, and then there would be a hearing, and that usually occurs within like 30 days of the notice. There's like a designation committee hearing, which is advisory, and then there's the Historical Commission. Some get tabled, and it takes years sometimes to designate or go through the process. And then once it is, protected, then it's regulated by the Historical Commission. There's no retroactive, you know, you have to restore the building immediately, right.
But it protects it from demolition.
Yep. And on the task force, one of the things I fought for was a designation option for districts and buildings that have more flexibility with design and material replacement.
And how many buildings have you nominated for preservation in Philadelphia? Do you know?
Just a couple.
No. More than a couple.
I don't know the exact number, but it's definitely more than 50. So it's a lot of buildings.
Faye, let me go to you. And I know you're involved in markers in Philadelphia as well. And sometimes buildings, we were talking about this building where we're here now, was the site of Preservation Hall, of
Pennsylvania Hall.
Which is here no more. But there is a marker outside. Mm-hmm. Why are markers so important?
Well, markers it's about public memory, whether it's a building, a site, or historical marker. It's about keeping these stories in public memory. For instance, there's not a marker there, but across from the Kimball Center used to be the home of Philadelphia International Records, the Sound of Philadelphia. It was demolished.
Gamble and Huff.
Gamble and Huff. The building was demolished 4 years ago. Now, you would think that a building that is storied as Philadelphia International Records, folks would remember 4 years later what used to be there. But just a couple weeks ago, standing in front of it, some folks walked by who would have known about Gamble and Huff during his heyday. I don't know what used to be there. So historical markers, they tell the public that someone or something happened that is worth remembering. It really is about representation and identity.
So even if the building isn't there, the marker at least tells someone that there was something important in
something
this place.
Something important and makes you wonder. Now, you've noted that I am director of All That Philly Jazz.
Yeah.
That what piqued my interest in documenting Philadelphia's golden age of jazz was an historical marker. The marker at 1409 Lombard Street reads that when Billie Holiday was in town, she often lived here. Now, oftentimes with a marker, there's no there, but in this case, the building is still there. It was a Green Book site, the Douglas Hotel, which is what, in this development boom, what we would want developers to do, to repurpose, to readapt. So it went from, again, the Green Book site, the Douglas Hotel.
It was safe for African Americans to stay there.
It was safe. It was safe. And it's now the headquarters of a social service agency. But it was a historical marker that got me started.
Well, let me turn back to you, UA, and talk about the Cultural Community Center. This is in Chinatown. I think everyone's familiar with that iconic arch over the street. What is the status on that?
So Chinese Cultural Community Center recently is sold to a private owner, and they have proposed a renovation. And at the beginning, in February, there is a demolition notice put on the building, and the community was shocked. And we
had no idea.
Yeah, like we started a petition to stop the demolition. And last time I checked, we got more than 6,800 signatures. That shows how much people care about this building. And then we communicate with the current owner, and they said it was not their intention to demolish the building. They do want to demolish part of the building to make the renovation plan work. But the original architectural drawing it was not clear about that. So they revised the drawing and resubmitted to the Historic Commission. And they went to the Architectural Committee's meeting. So there are two committees in Historic Commission. One is Architectural Committee. The other one is Historic Committee. Architectural Committee mainly look at the building material and the construction technical stuff.
Design plans.
Yes, yeah. Design plans. So the architecture committee looked at the drawing. The drawing was still not clear. They asked a lot of questions, and they learned the concept of the renovation. They said the concept was okay, but the drawings was not in good quality.
So interesting.
Yeah, documentation was not good enough.
But it sounds like that there were the people living in Chinatown were signing, you said almost 7,000 people signed a petition that really forced the developer to come up with a better plan or perhaps a better design.
That's what we are trying to do. We also, PCDC also connect them with other resources because I study historic preservation and I speak Chinese. I can communicate with them. I can really help them to navigate through this process.
But do you think there will be, and will the arch be preserved? Do we know?
So the building will be preserved because it's regulated. There's no way the owners can demolish the building, but we also want to support the productive reuse.
Any thoughts about that?
No, I think that, as I said before, I'm a strong supporter of, more flexible standards. We live in a city where there's a lot of poverty, and the fact that this task force was the first time we were really talking about more flexible standards as a policy. That it's pretty sad. I often say, actually, my colleague Jim Duffin, who's a local archivist, often says that Philadelphia lives under the stranglehold of low expectations, and we feel like, we can't ask them to preserve this. But the fact is that we can come up with more flexible standards, and being flexible is part of ensuring that our heritage will be preserved and reused. I personally do like development. I just want it to incorporate the historic fabric that's there.
Because we also know Philly has a lot of just abandoned derelict buildings as well. I mean, that's sort of a discussion for a whole different time, but nonetheless, it's all part of this built environment. We got a lot of people that want to join the conversation. Let me just reintroduce the three of you. Faye Anderson, director of All That Philly Jazz. She's also chair of the Avenging the Ancestors Coalition Committee on Historic Preservation. Yue Wu is a community planner project associate for the Philadelphia Chinatown Development Corporation, and Oscar Beisert is a local preservationist founder of the Keeping Society of Philadelphia, all of them interested in preservation here in Philadelphia. Let me get Candace from Northeast Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. And Candace, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm an immigrant advocate in Philly, and my question is, I know that traditionally the city has kind of focused on historic preservation of things going back to maybe the Revolutionary War period or just general American history and early European immigrants, but immigrant communities that have been here maybe the past 50 or 100 years, like in Chinatown or the Cambodian Commercial Corridor. I'm wondering if there are any sort of policies and considerations in the wider discussion about preservation regarding, immigrant communities and their landmarks, because, some of these communities also being threatened with displacement. I'm just wondering if this is, you know, a policy discussion that is being had or that could be had.
And we're talking in certain ways about more recent revivals. I'm going to get to you, UA, but let me toss that to you, Oscar, because you sat on the Historic Preservation Task Force.
I don't know if, I mean, I'm sure it was mentioned that there needs to be more education and that there should be more landmarks for, you know, minority and marginalized communities. I don't know that there was really much of a study done on how many have been landmarked versus that really wasn't within the scope of the task force that I am aware of. Mm-hmm. But I would say as the Keeping Society, myself and the people that I work with, that's, you know, one of our projects is trying to help communities preserve their history. Recently, we got the first LGBTQ landmark, the Kamak Baths. That was also a bathhouse that was used by immigrant Jews, and largely that was what the bathhouse was for. And I think, you know, I've also focused on some African-American landmarks. So I think that, you know, preserving the history of marginalized communities has mm-hmm. not really been a focus of the city. But I think that the ordinance itself allows for it because Criterion J is about culture more so than it is about, you know, architectural style, let's say. And I think that was a question that the Park Service, who manages these kind of standards at like a national level, has had to face with LGBTQ landmarks often. The landmarks of marginalized communities are not pretty. You know, they're not beautiful buildings, but does that mean they shouldn't be preserved or that incorporated into a development? That's question.
It's a very interesting question. Faith, let me turn to you. And I was reading some of the things that you want is first a citywide survey. I mean, I guess sort of to know what it is that we have within the city.
Well, right now is demolition now, survey later. As Oscar has already noted, he has a list of hundreds of buildings that are not protected. I have a list, probably the same list of hundreds of buildings that are not protected. I'll give you a good example of why we need the survey. There's a building at 2125 Ridge Avenue. From all appearances, it was a rundown, vacant, blighted property. But that rundown, vacant, blighted property is one of the last buildings associated with Philadelphia's golden age of jazz. In the 1930s, it was a Checker Cafe. It later became the Checker Club. So I fought to save it because we have so few buildings associated with Philadelphia's golden age of jazz. But without a survey, clearly the Philadelphia Housing Authority wanted to demolish it. Clearly, they did not know the significance of that building. But if there had been a survey, they would have known and saved themselves a lot of grief that that building was of cultural significance. And if I could just add about the built environment, the built environment reflects socioeconomic status. So there are few buildings that associated with African Americans in particular that are adorned, that would be valued for their architectural beauty. It's the people, the events associated with the building that makes it of political and economic or cultural significance. So to superimpose some architectural integrity standard on it is really just an excuse to deny protection.
And it sounds like, though, Oscar, you're saying there is some flexibility in terms of what could or could not be, I guess, what could be preserved.
I think that, you know, historically there hasn't been as much. In Philadelphia, it's sort of evolved. If you went to Society Hill now, you would see a beautiful, you know, the buildings that are there that are 18th century are beautiful facades, restored. Not when they started that project, many of those facades were covered over with other facades. You know, whole new facades were built to restore the building. I think when you look at a house like the Minton House and probably an even more important building, the William and Leticia Still House on South Delhi Street, is a house where we were able to figure out that this was a house where William Still sort of operated one of the most important Underground Railroad way stations in the region. And it has a new facade. Unfortunately, the owner did not object, and so the Historical Commission designated the building. when you go to that building, you see there's these marble steps. And when you realize that, like, that's where Harriet Tubman probably stood when she arrived at Philadelphia, I mean, that's just incredible. And it's so powerful. And I think there is more. The marker there would be great, but I think seeing those steps and knowing that she might have touched that, a facade can be restored.
Sure, sure. But it looks like you want to add something, Yowei. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think for a minority group, our heritage is less recognized by the public, and that put us in a disadvantage. If you are talking about the significance of an event of someone, if this event or this person was not known by people, it's very difficult to make the case. But they are very important for our community. And another thing I want to add is that talking about flexibility, for a building to be designated, it has to be more than 50 years old. And there is a building which is at 913 Ray Street.
913 Ray. Mm-hmm.
It is the address where Chinatown started. The first laundry business was opened there. But the original building was gone. And another building was built, the building was not old enough to be designated. Uh-huh. But that building is where the first town hall meeting of Chinatown was held. And that town hall meeting talked about Vine Street Expressway. Vine Street Expressway really disrupts the Chinatown, and the original proposal will take a lot of historic fabric of Chinatown away, and the beloved Holy Redeemer Church and School. And the first town hall meeting, we have a lot of people to talk about how to save Chinatown.
And I want to pick up on that after this very short break. That's Yowei Wu, and also with us Oscar Beisert and Faye Anderson. We're talking about preservation here in Philadelphia. A lot of folks that want to join us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Email address, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moskowain, talking about preservation with citizen preservationists here in our Philadelphia studio, Faye Anderson, Yowei Wu, and Oscar Beisert. Let me read actually a Facebook comment we got actually last night from Stroud. Nothing we build is meant to last forever, and yet we are too often quick to get rid of things at the same time. This kind of dichotomy there. Aaron's been very patient calling us from West Philadelphia. Aaron, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Marty, thank you for having this segment and for choosing these particular guests, all of whom I have the pleasure of knowing in one capacity or another. Hello to all of you.
Hi.
Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Aaron.
Aaron, I think you need to say who you are, because clearly the guests know who you are, but I do not, and I don't think our listeners do.
So, Marty, you and I met years ago when you had a show on Laurel Hill Cemetery. I teach historic preservation at the University of Pennsylvania, and I am also the president of a group called Repoint, which is a political action group supporting stronger preservation measures in Philadelphia. So that's my background. But what I wanted to say quickly are two things. When we have this conversation, the one we're having today, I think it's important to stipulate that there's nothing like a kind of level playing field in this kind of game between developers and preservationists. The demolition process can be set in motion irrevocably the moment someone applies for a permit, and the process can take months for an individual site, or years, or decades, or never at all for a historic district. So that's one way in which this is not a level playing field. But I think in some ways the deeper thing worth pointing out here is a kind of a linguistic one or a semantic one. Preservationists are often discussed as activists, as they were at the start of your program,
right.
Kind of a special interest group engaged in something called advocacy. The development interest, on the other hand, is so baked into this city's government that its influence on everything from the Historical Commission to the Preservation Task Force to LNI doesn't even have a name. But we need to give it a name, I would suggest. Activism works, so does lobbying. And so does, I think, a renewed attention to the concept of conflict of interest. So I will leave it at that.
Okay, fair enough, Aaron. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. I always think of activists as a good thing, not as a bad thing. So I just want to make sure to put that out there. Oscar, anything you want to say back to Aaron?
I would just say that, you know, he is right that the moment, you know, in fact, this morning when I went to work, I noticed there was a demolition permit within a block from my house on probably 160-year-old twin of houses. There's no discussion of that. There was no, you know, nobody came to my door and knocked, not that I would expect them to, but in D.C., if I'd seen that, and let's say it was on a more important building, I could have filed a nomination. And if the building was important enough, it could have stopped the demolition. Now, they would be probably much more flexible on letting them sort of incorporate the building into a new – they might get, you know, more permissions than what otherwise might be. But I think that it is important to note that once that permit is filed, the building is as good as gone. And with so little protected, this is a major problem. We see it every day, literally.
But go ahead.
And if I can add, I always identify myself as a lifelong activist, so I wear the activist hat proudly. Oscar, several times, and Aaron too, mentioned the demolition process and the demolition culture, and how it works here is the task force on which Oscar served, the mayor's task force on historic preservation, released a report, its final report after 2 years, its final report on Thursday. The following day, less than 24 hours later, a demolition permit was issued to demolish the Wharton Center on 22nd and Cecil B. Moore, a Wharton Center that was an anchor in the African American community. If Oscar, who can churn out a nomination overnight, he could have submitted the nomination that Monday, but the demolition permit has already been issued. And what the owner has said is that he's going to demolish it to maintain a vacant lot. And so this is what happens with this culture of demolition. It's a race to City Hall. Who gets there? It's a race to LNI or to Historic Commission. Who gets there first with a complete nomination or a complete application to demolish? And so that's why this historic building will be demolished and it can sit there as a vacant lot for decades for fear that it will be nominated.
Yue, let me turn back to you and actually turn back to something you were mentioning earlier, which was the creation of 676, which essentially cut through Chinatown. What kinds of problems, I guess, has that created for the community of Chinatown?
Well, that's a lot of problems. And first of all, it creates a physical and a psychological barrier to the community. So it divides the community into two, and the commercial core that is south of Chinatown. People perceive Chinatown as that small area, but our business actually extend to north of Vine too, and sometimes people visited south of Vine, they don't go to north of Vine. And it's very hard to connect the community from south and north. Mm-hmm. And also, we have convention center at west and the fashion district at south and old city at east. North is the only way we can expand, we can grow. And with Vine Street Expressway, it really like discourages that. And one thing we are doing right now is building a community center north of Vine Street that is Tencent Vine, and we call it Korean Chinatown. And Korean Chinatown. And it has a long-needed community center. It has a gym, and people can play basketball and have big events there. And it's really expected to drive the growth of Chinatown to north of Vine Street.
So how one building can really help to hold a community together.
Yeah.
Here's a comment from Andrew. I'm curious, with the election coming up, if your guests feel that ending the abatement tax is an important part of slowing the destruction of historic buildings and driving more developers towards restoration instead of demolition. I know that's like a giant question here, but it is one, Oscar, that's being talked about. How do you see abatement, and could it be used to preserve older buildings?
So, of course, you can get an abatement for reusing a building. I mean, it's not just for new construction, but it the way that it's currently structured does incentivize demolition in a way. And ultimately, we're subsidizing that with our tax dollars. So I think it is important to look at the tax abatement and to maybe, you know, do some restructuring so that it can, you know, serve as a way to fill a vacant lot or build a larger building near a train stop or something that leads to public good, like preservation. Unfortunately, at the moment, you know, it isn't doing that exactly. But I think ultimately what we need is we need the political will to protect our city. And you can have an abatement, you can end the abatement, but ultimately we need the political will to protect our city. I'm still hopeful that the task force recommendations are, you know, will lead to something positive. Mm-hmm. I think they will in some ways, but we need that political will.
But is preservation more expensive than redevelopment?
I think in some cases preservation is more expensive. It depends on the condition of the building. Many of our buildings are not in great shape. I think, though, that if you were to look at, you know, a time when, let's say, banks aren't lending as much, mm-hmm. They are, you often see then all of a sudden people reuse buildings. So, you know, you see that especially in like the poorer communities, you'll see developers will reuse buildings more often. So I find it, you know, hard to take that argument.
Let me get Thaddeus from, looks like Overbrook Farms to join us in Radio Times. Hi, Thaddeus. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi,
hi, Oscar and Faye. How you doing?
Fine. Hi, Thaddeus.
Go ahead.
I wanted to pick up on a couple themes about money and sort of value optimization that a couple callers and you have touched on, and how we can shift the culture of preservation and attitudes away from this kind of one of opposition between, you know, owners or developers and the preservation community, and really leverage civic pride. I've met through my work with Hidden City, people of all socioeconomic and cultural backgrounds who really have a strong sense of history and pride in their house or their place and are willing to do stuff that isn't always, you know, economically prudent. They're willing to put sweat and money into preserving that heritage out of that pride. And we do have a lot of pride, I think, in Philly across the board. And I'd love to know how we could sort of have that be part of the reckoning when we think about preservation. It's not just about financial optimization, but about both investment in the asset, but also preservation of history and heritage across the board, not just amongst an elite notion.
Yeah, no, and Thaddeus, I think that's a really good point. And Faye, can I put that to you first?
Yes. Hi, Thaddeus. Actually, it's already part of historic preservation ordinance. Talk about public good. We are not just a bunch of busybodies. The city's historic preservation says, as a matter of public policy, it's in our interest to preserve these places that are associated with these economic, cultural, political events or purpose, in part to instill civic pride. So that's already in the law. And Oscar has alluded to it several times. It really is a matter of political will. That the law is there. All we are doing is using the law to try to preserve buildings that matter. And if I can just add, that matter, that there are very little resources for historic preservation. To Oscar's credit, he nominates a wide range of buildings. But the preservation community is not very diverse. The commission staff is all white. And so since these nominations are driven by passion because you're volunteering, so if folks want to see more buildings associated with immigrant community nominated, they're going to have to get involved in the preservation movement. I call myself a lifelong activist and a citizen preservationist. You don't need any special skills to want to save these buildings that matter. All we are doing is following the law to preserve these buildings, to instill civic pride.
Oscar, are there some success stories where you feel like development and preservation came together as a team, in a sense, to save a building?
Well, I think that, you know, there's success stories in the sense that buildings that would have been demolished that were nominated have been reused, or there are plans to reuse them. I think there are several cases. I mean, most of the nominations have been successful. Some of those buildings are still sitting. Most of them have been reused. I mean, even First African Baptist now has been reused. The congregation still made a fair amount of money on the building. I think, you know, when we think about this sort of idea of public good and public space, a city, especially in our, like, growing gap of income, you know, the haves and the haves not, a sense that you own your city is an amazing one. I think a lot of New Yorkers probably feel that way. I mean, you know, about that this is their city, the whole city is theirs. And I think Chinatown's like the perfect example of an area that is like in some ways like a public area. Even though it is a neighborhood, it's an area that has like a strong sense of place. And, you know, we need to think about how can we preserve that sense of place, but also in an affordable way and that allows for change.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Yue.
So I think the law and the historic commission has its limitation in terms of preserving the community, because our community is facing the pressure of development and gentrification. Even if we have all of our buildings preserved, if like the community was displaced, there's no way the sense of place will be still there. So
it sounds like there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
In a sense, you're hemmed in, right?
Mm-hmm. And the historic commission protects the historic buildings, but it doesn't have some like a tour. We don't have a tour. We don't have a policy tour to protect the community itself.
Did you want to add
something?
I just
wanted to say something about the you mentioned that most of the buildings would not be preserved even if the community left, so there wouldn't even be this sense of history. I think that's an important point with the High Line or with the elevated park that's being done in Callow Hill and in Chinatown mm-hmm. right now.
The rail park.
The rail park. And, you know, when New York started their High Line, the first thing they did was they designated the area as the Gansevoort Market, you know, historic district and meatpacking district. If you went to the meatpacking district years ago, you would have said, that's not historic. It's run down. It's gross. Now, even though I can't afford to live there, I can go there and look at a beautiful neighborhood. I can feel amazing when I walk through there. I see, you know, this one-story facade of a meatpacking plant with this amazing design behind it. And the fact is that in Philadelphia, we wouldn't even get that. We'd get a townhome, gated townhome community that no one wanted to walk by. And I think that sense of, it's again this stranglehold of low expectations and not planning and thinking ahead.
Faye, I'm going to give you the last word in 30 seconds to just summarize your thoughts.
Well, it's whose story is told, whose story is preserved, that we in Philadelphia need to move beyond Ben Franklin's Philadelphia, the founding fathers, who frankly do not speak to African Americans, given most of them were slaveholders. So to move beyond Ben Franklin's Philadelphia to John Coltrane's Philadelphia, a Philadelphia that embraces all of his people, that's diverse, that includes all of us.
Well, a good way to end our conversation. My thanks to all three of you. Faye Anderson, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And she is director of All That Philly Jazz. Yue Wu, thank you for coming in as well.
Thank you.
And she's community planner, project associate for the Philadelphia Chinatown Development Corporation. And Oscar Beiser, thank you for coming in as well.
Thank you for having me.
And he's a local preservationist, founder of the Keeping Society of Philadelphia. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, sign up for our newsletter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.